this is News Rocky Kevin coming to you live here from the Pie Hop Studio at 80 Broadway in downtown Norwich. Today we're going to have a very interesting guest. Today we're going to be talking with Dewan Eastman. Dewan Eastman is a co-owner of the Citizens Opposed to Police State. If you guys recall, we had an individual who's also part of that back about 3 weeks ago or so. And these gentlemen were involved in an incident down in the West Haven area due to a march that was taking place, a peaceful march from their perspective that was actually assaulted in some ways by the West Haven police. This episode that we are taping today, this is our Back the Blue episode, and I want to appreciate Dewan Eastman for coming on and having this serious conversation. Guys, you're going to hear about a lot of good conversations about the police, the reaction by those protesters throughout Connecticut, and I think Dewan has connections throughout the country. We'll have a really good time, so guys, get ready. Let's go get in the ring with News Rocky. And here we are.
Hello, Rocky.
Yeah. Hey, and Dewan Eastman on the line. How are you today? This is News Rocky, and welcome to the show.
I'm doing very well. Excited.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you're excited. So are I. You know, we're in a crazy time in the world we live in. There's so much going on. The news is filled with more negative than probably any one heart can handle. First, let me just ask you, how are you, your family? How are you doing this COVID time, this time of lockdown? How are you doing, Dewan?
Well, my mother and my family in Tennessee were infected with COVID, and she's just recently recovering, as in she started eating, and she's so tough, she started working as of tomorrow. Yesterday, just had to get back to work, but she was down for COVID where she couldn't eat. My family was infected, but none of them seemed to be symptomatic carriers. In Connecticut, I haven't really seen as much because my wife happens to be a doctor, so we're like in a hermit. We in our protest in here, we kind of shielded ourselves from it, took the necessary precautions, and with my wife's medical background, we already knew what those precautions were, especially with the COVID family of viruses.
Interesting. So that's it. Now, do you have your wife, you have a family here in the state of Connecticut. Do you have some kids you're raising here in Connecticut as well?
Yes, two.
Okay, very cool. And you're living out in Farmington, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're out in Farmington, Connecticut. Very nice. So, yes. Dewan, you know, it's interesting. We had your partner or your co-owner or one of your associates from the Citizens Opposed to Police State that were on not too long ago. We discussed the incident in West Haven. This is what led us to having this opportunity to talk to you today. And I just want to learn a little bit about you. Let's talk a little bit about you. You said you grew up in Tennessee. How did you get to Connecticut? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, tell us in an elevator speech a little bit about Dewan.
Oh, basically, I was born in Tennessee to a family that fell in love and was raised in segregation. And, you know, you have the necessary financial problems you would have where they were adults during the time the United States was segregated in Tennessee, where it was segregated. From there, we were actually a slightly mixed family. In my case, I'm 1/4 Irish because my grandmother, her and my grandfather both were in a mulatto separated school. That's where they met, because they were mixed, and that's kind of where my family line begins. Okay. And I guess I've just always been on the intersection of what I see as two cultures.
Okay.
And you know, to escape some of the harsher forms of that intersection from Tennessee, being in an interracial marriage, I moved to Connecticut, seeing it as a much more tolerant place.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think it has proved to be. And I think those intersections, I guess, would be the elevator pitch. The intersections of understanding exactly where we're coming from as a culture. I've been forced to live in those two cultures and accept that they're two differing cultures.
Interesting. So you had the upbringing in Tennessee, found your way here. Your wife is a doctor. You're raising some children. You're very active. And I see on your platform here, it seems like you have a lot of different locations where you've been educated. You've studied things. It looks like you've studied in many locations. You can talk a little bit about that, but you're also a martial artist. Is that correct?
Yes. My dad started me in Okinawan karate as a child to deal with a bit of hyperactivity that I had. That and his belt were very good remedies for that
Okay.
hyperactivity.
All right. All right.
The discipline always stayed with me, so that's where the Marine Corps and academics came in. I stayed in school through and also worked and just kind of kept getting an education and studying because I saw it as a safer place than what I had seen in the South and the violent streets.
Did you were you
And so
a, were
it
you an
became kind of
introvert?
a
Were you an introvert as a child? Did you get in trouble a lot, or were you on the streets, or did you usually study and go home and, kind of work on your studies?
Very much like I am now. I would basically be studying, but when I get out and everybody's and the police sirens are going and the hell is raised.
Okay, so you're a hellraiser a little bit too then, huh? So, all right, we'll get into a little bit of that, and that's fine. So you served in the Marines. Tell me a little bit about your time in the Marines and what was your actual position? I believe it's called MOS in the Marines.
Yes.
What was your
In the
ma
MOS, my MOS was field wire, and for a short time I had intel training. It was the basic requirements to basically my Marine Corps experience was nothing exceptional. All I did was what I needed to get a college education, knowing that my parents didn't have the ability to give it to me. I took the safest job and I walked through active and reserves training just like anyone else. There's really nothing to brag about in it.
Okay. So you served your country, you have been in well educated, and you continue to educate even as an adult. You're an adult learner, I think is safe to say. What causes you today, as you live in Connecticut, you kind of opened up with me that you live in a state that you left Tennessee, the segregation still active, in your opinion, I'm sure, down there, there's never going to go away. But when you're here in Connecticut, you said it's a pretty cool state to live in. What inspires you to feel like you still need to be an activist in this area when it says citizens opposed to police states?
Yeah, thank you. That is a excellent question that gets to the root of this to some extent. Seeing Connecticut, I believe Connecticut racism is an awful thing. And I think Connecticut has gotten hit with this, I guess, resurgence of racism through a Russian intelligence thing or whatever we believe. We can't really know. But this resurgence of hate in our country, I think places that are ignorant to their hate, especially by virtue of being highly segregated, are the ones that will find themselves the most vulnerable to it. In the South, we've done a lot of killing due to racism. Your average white kid who was raised in Connecticut, even the ones that you will find saying racist comments, is honestly someone who is racially ignorant. And I think the distinction has to be made sometimes, and we don't make it because in our media, this is a racially ignorant kid whose first thoughts were some racist stuff about race, who honestly, I think those people are winnable in a sense.
Do
And
you
that it would
find
be a
it? Do,
shame to let.
go ahead. Can finish your thought. I'm sorry.
No, I'd rather hear you.
No, in
It
the
was,
co yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it was I think those people are more winnable, and I don't think they even I genuinely believe they're being honest when they say that their misunderstandings on race are misunderstandings, because I think we don't even acknowledge that these are two different cultures.
Do you feel that the
And one
racism,
culture
do you feel the racism conversation, DeJuan, could be a conversation that has many pathways, right? I mean, racism is not exclusive. I think we hear in the country, I think the George Floyd incident, right, for example, it's been amplified. The COVID situation, we've had a hell of a summer here in 2020, and looks like we're beginning 2021 with some craziness that we'll get into in a little bit about the DC stuff. But do you think that conversation, maybe sometimes folks, like, for example, if I'm on a panel and I happen to be the only white guy and I'm told that you're racist and I truly believe I'm not, that's kind of the feelings that I think some people are trying to articulate. Do you understand that coming out of people's mouths sometimes?
Yes, because we're in the United States, we live under a tyranny of racism where racism is like snow. We should have 1,000 words for it, but unfortunately, we only have like one word for it. And that is why I even as much as I hate to give in to the part of the argument that says don't yell racism, I tend to try and show the logic of why something is wrong before I yell racism. There's actually a little bit of truth to it's more effective to tell somebody how what they're doing is wrong and let them understand it's racist than it is to say racist. But sometimes we still have to keep racism having the power of the word, or else shit runs amok.
I
Can I say shit
mean,
on here?
yeah, you can actually, you can say shit, you can say fuck, you can say anything you want. How's that sound? You're on News Rocky.
Oh,
That's what
that
we do.
sounds good.
Yeah, we're News Rocky. We're on News Rocky. Speak freely. I want you to do, Duan, I want you to speak freely. I'm going to, as we elevate this conversation, I want, because you know what? This is how we're going to learn. This is what we're going to do, right? So I'm a retired correction officer who then got into politics. I actually worked in the state house as a state representative, and I was fortunate to serve the people in my community. I'm very pro law enforcement. Many of my friends are that. You have a situation here, for example, let me, because we're carrying this conversation. Yesterday we had an incident. We're going to get to the West Haven thing. I want to hear your thoughts now. It's fresh. In Washington, D.C., actually, we had a march that was basically, you know, sort of called together by the President of the United States, the 45th, Donald Trump. And we have people that actually, people died inside the Capitol. They stormed the Capitol. There was the estimates of millions of people. But you know, you look in comparison for numbers for arrest that back in, I think it was August, Black Lives Matters had over 35 or 40 members arrested for their march in D.C. Do you think it's a little bit off balance there with comparison to yesterday's events?
Yes, and I get the arrest because I've been arrested. We get arrested for a lot of very dumb stuff that honestly, it you're protesting the police. The police should be professional enough, and a lot of times they are. Nationally, it's very different than Connecticut. The police have to be professional enough to accept the fact that we are protesting them and not get their feels involved. We have to demand more, I guess, more out of them than we would a criminal or anyone else. That is kind of part of the job. But I also don't like the idea. I feel I'm a hypocrite on this issue
Okay.
because my gut instinct, especially when it comes to Trump protesters, and this may be just the nature of the division in our country, is to say, cops, give them some law and order right now. Because I look at it as chickens coming home to roost, because I think when the cops are doing stuff to me, their rhetoric has aided that cop in going there. But that's not a fair assessment. We have to be, if we're going to be moral people, we have to be logical in that. I would say I hope that the arrests only lead to minor charges and nobody. I hate that people are murdered, were murdered, and I hope that there's some justice for their families, because God, the last thing we need is dead people.
As a person who has been in many, many protests, do you support the folks, regardless if you don't agree with their message, do you support them converging on Washington, D.C. yesterday in a peaceful protest? Not the anarchists or the ones that got out of hand, because no one's going to argue that that was wrong. But the folks that converged on Washington, D.C., would you support them in their efforts?
To the extent that they have the First Amendment rights, yes. And even their Second Amendment rights, even though I disagree with the efficacy or safety of marching with guns.
Do you carry a gun?
No.
Okay. You're trained with weapons. You understand weapons. You
Yes.
choose not to have a
Yes.
weapon around you. Your
Correct.
position on weapons are, do you think when you see video or you're at a march or you're at an activity where you see people with weapons, how does that make you feel? Are you intimidated by it?
I've done armed protests. It depends on who has the weapon.
Okay, so some of the folks that protest with you and some of the organizations you're affiliated with, you actually have been with folks that are armed on the same side of the argument as you. Okay, interesting. So, Dewan, let's kind of skip into this. The Washington, D.C. thing is big. It's huge. People died. We kind of just talked to it, and you said to an extent you support that First Amendment and trying to stay out of the hypocritical because we're all guilty of it sometimes. That same group of people having a passion for whatever they believe, you have taken advantage of that same energy, and I don't say taking advantage, but, you know, put yourself out there. You were down in West Haven. If we can pull up, do we have that West Haven? We'll get it queued up at some point. I'm going to start to talk about that day as we're getting ready to pull that up. But, Devon, tell me a little bit about the day that you were involved in an incident with a tasering of one of the folks. And go into the story a little bit so we can talk about it.
Yeah, for me, I came in hot afterwards because me and Kurt are actually really good friends. We met at the Bridgeport encampment and started Citizens Opposed to Police States, with him coming up with the name and me doing a lot of the infrastructure. And the way we worked together is, you know, it really hurt my soul to have to sit there and have to watch the video of him getting hit in the back. Mm-hmm. So what we did was actually just what I would say is a standard operating procedure for our more militant protesters in Bridgeport. We stood out the police station after they assaulted Kira and Kurt. Or they were basically Kira and Kurt. Kurt was arrested, and for what seems like some him and Croce didn't get along. I think
Croce's the officer. You're saying
the way to characterize it.
You're saying the officer.
Yeah, didn't get along, and you could see. Right. You could see some agitation there. I see that as separate from the racial issue or the policing issue, though, because I get that being in the military, it's hard to control everybody. Sometimes you have to see an individual and understand that that is an individual action that's unprofessional.
Let's watch this clip.
The department.
Well, let's watch this clip and let's check it out. Mm-hmm.
Three people that were arrested Sunday. He tells me he was the one that was hit with a taser. He is now being represented by an attorney who says he wants answers.
It's sad. It's scary. I don't know who to call. We can't call nobody right now if we have a problem.
Kurt Erickson, sitting with his wife, shows Fox 61 his injuries after being arrested. You see here he has bruised knees, and you can still see the marks from being hit with a taser. He also showed us this paperwork saying he has a fracture to his spine. These are the moments leading up to Erickson's injury. He was filming another protester getting arrested.
I got you, bro. I got you, bro.
On the ground with my face down, he's sitting there saying really derogatory things in my ear and macing me point blank. And they already had three other cops on me, and he was off, kept going back down to do different things to me. And all we wanted was justice for the woman that just ran through the cars.
The same woman seen here whizzing past protesters, sparking the entire event. All of this catching attention of State Senator Dennis Bradley, who says the way this was handled was poorly done.
The police department themselves came with canines to this peaceful protest, something which is a throwback to the 1950s civil rights movement, 1960s civil rights movement, utterly unnecessary.
Senator Bradley is also an attorney and now representing Erickson. Bradley says the officer who arrested his client knew him and claims the officer whispered racial slurs while arresting Erickson.
Not only will my client be vindicated, but more importantly, we hope that this police officer who time and time again abuses his power and abuses his discretion will be fired from this police department.
West Haven's police chief writing on Monday, I will not elaborate on said incident at this time due to the fact that the investigation is ongoing. However, I will say that peaceful demonstrations are a freedom enjoyed in our country.
There will be change, and the people will no longer tolerate, both black and white, will no longer tolerate the status quo.
Now, while State Senator Bradley will be fighting for Erickson in and out of the courtroom, Erickson hopes that the state adopts New York's executive order that was produced last month on police reform. He says that he hopes that will be a blueprint on better building community relations between law enforcement and the community it serves. In West Haven, Brian Ditlake, Fox 61 News.
So, Dewan, as we're watching that video, you were a part of it that day, and you were down there in that sort of incident. And a couple of things I have questions for. First and foremost, there was a peaceful protest that was planned, but was it actually legally allowed? Was it a takeover, or was it a pop-up, or was it actually something was organized with the town, in your opinion?
This was actually organized with the town and the cops this time. that was what made the attack so surprising, and why, if you see some of the newer footage, you'll see that we don't really communicate with the cops as nicely as we did before. They were supposed to block the traffic for us, number one. And there's no world where a woman tries to hit a child and we don't, and someone gives her the keys back.
So I appreciate that. And so you're opening it up, and I want to kind of walk through it. So the plan was that the town, the city police, they all knew about this gathering. You're claiming that they got there. And I heard with Senator Bradley, who not only being a senator and actually one of the lead legislators moving forward the police accountability bill that was just signed by the governor here in Connecticut, but also a lawyer who now has been retained in this case. Interesting conversation about the vehicle. Your partner was claiming wanting to get justice. I don't think he quite meant justice. I think he meant something else in that situation. This Spanish young female, I think she had a Spanish last name, if I correctly saw that. Not that that means anything. She ended up getting a ticket or not a ticket. I can't remember in this subject.
I'm not exactly sure. It was, justice is such, when you try and run over a child, justice is such a difficult term to even come with.
Why was she so anxious to get out of there, Juwan? Why do you think the driver, was she scared? Was she intimidated? Was anyone hitting the, I'm just asking, I wasn't there.
Her body language didn't strike me as intimidating, but I would imagine at any protest, if I came in and tried to run over someone's kids and two people had used their bodies to shield those kids I tried to run over and I got out the car, I would be anxious to get out of there too, because I would imagine those people wouldn't like me that much.
Right. So you're referring to the attempted, you're claiming that this driver was attempting to get away and almost hit or did hit somebody. This driver ended up getting a citation, I believe. I'm not correct. I didn't do the research. This is based on the last interview. Go ahead.
Full disclosure, I'm saying that secondhand from hearing it from Kurt and Kara. Okay. I got there for the protest afterwards. I want to be honest.
No, that's fine. But part of your organization is to organize events like this. You do get involved with organizing events, right? So would you call your organizing platform anarchy? How would you label your attempt? You talked a little bit about the more militant folks earlier on. Did you have that mindset with this event? We were going to go hardcore, or was it something that just happened?
We're more consensus-minded. From our position, even in the name, you listen to it, it's citizens opposed to police states. It doesn't represent exactly how, in my views, when it comes to my, political views, I'm an anarcho-syndicalist very far on the left. I don't think that that necessarily works as a form of government for the United States. So you separate the two and you get citizens opposed to police states. Let's say you're full abolish, for instance. One thing we all can agree on when we start reform is that we don't want police states. Mm-hmm. So in the name, what we're saying, even though it's a bit of a wordplay, is that let's see where we can start from and try and get some middle ground where we can all be reached.
Do you need
our
police?
Our protest philosophy same as the company philosophy.
Duane, do you need police? Do you need police in the world we live in? Do you think that there is a need?
We need law enforcement, and the job that police have, we're going to have. It's just that in our country, policing has went awry, from my opinion.
Okay.
And I think that we need to redefine how we do our law enforcement in this country to create a more equitable country.
So this incident took place. How many of those types of, these events that you've gone to organized or participated in here in Connecticut with this same topic of sort of pushing back on a police state? How many have you been involved with, Duane?
Oh, hundreds. I started back in the summer, and honestly, it's been like three times every week at least that we're protesting in different areas all over Connecticut, Mass, just wherever we can.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the overwhelming majority have been peaceful.
Do you find when you're involved in these, it's hard to control everyone's activity? I mean, you do have a lot of boiling emotion. We opened up and we talked a little bit about what Washington, D.C. and some of that. I'm sure the organizers or the people who were there, the bus drivers, whatever, no one wanted to see what took place there. How do you control that as an organizer? You're obviously in a lead role here with the citizens opposing a police state. Do you ever feel a sense of responsibility if somebody gets hurt or arrested?
I feel a responsibility every time someone gets hurt or arrested, whether it's on my side or not, okay. Because I've got military training and I'm starting this protest. It is a civil act of disobedience, but for a protester, any protester, to say that they're not responsible for any of the violence that happens at their events, even if it's from the police, that they didn't know that this was a possibility, is just dishonest.
That's a very good approach. So you know, as you're planning one of these events, because I've planned many events, but not probably these types of things, more political gatherings, or, you know, you go out and hear a support. How does this work? Is there like a underground group of folks that kind of communicate here in Connecticut? Is it public? How do you communicate with your supporters?
The thing is, a lot of this work is coordination. We're all so focused on what we want to get done and how much we want this change, mm-hmm. that we're doing essentially what the ethos of cops is. So we all just know. It's like we put up a Facebook post. You know people from reputation. You know who's going to be looking for your safety. You know who the outside agitators are and everything else. So you just look and you know, because you've been out there, mm-hmm. what, you know, who, how people roll. And we just coordinate that way.
You posted recently on your social media platform, you posted an incident that took place in West Haven. You actually say in your post, you know how I feel about the West Haven PD. They are my favorite readers. Seems they are having a bit of trouble controlling their racist ass cars in their latest blooper reel. What is that about?
Yeah, that was kind of mean on my part and petty, but they asked Kurt to ask me to take down my Facebook or stop posting about them. So I kind of just, and they, in the charges they put against him, they actually were going to put his freedom on what I put. They were verbally worded the way that they were trying to restrict his speech to my Facebook.
So you saw.
I kind of am just saying fuck you to them, just because fuck you. It isn't just it's not really because they're police. It's specifically because fuck West Haven PD.
So just to clear, so I think we got it clear. Let me say fuck you, West Haven PD from DeJuan. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. So yes. This incident that took place, was this a live incident that there was video from where you say I guess you're kind of making some fun and poking fun at these guys for this follies. There, I assume that was someone in the vehicle that should not have been driving, correct?
Yeah, unfortunately, a criminal, this is why I am a little embarrassed with my behavior. A criminal took the cop's car and ran the cop over. And I don't know for certain if the cop was a bad cop. And the vehicle obviously can't be racist by nature. It's a bit of, you know, it's a bit of absurdity, but it was mostly it was a petty kind of just fuck you for trying to tell me what to write on Facebook.
Okay, so you don't like the West Haven PD. Do you hate all police officers? Let me ask you that question. Are you just an anti,
not at all,
I hate cops, stay out of my way life?
Not at all. I think we all start off in this system and in this world as just people trying to navigate our ways through. I don't think because you of the uniform you wear, that changes exactly how fragile and human we all are.
Okay, so in staying on track with that, so I think, thank God, that an officer didn't get killed yesterday or during this incident in West Haven. I'm happy with that. I think I saw in the video there, not that it's relevant, but saying that, you know, I know you have an answer for this, I'm sure. A lot of times we refer to, or at least folks refer, not me, I hear reference that, you know, racist cops. I saw in that video there was more than just white officers at that scene. Do you feel that even the officers who might be of other cultures adopt the same policies as those cops that you call racist?
Yes, if the police culture leads to that. And and of course, in this particular case, when I let out a FU to an entire organization like West West Haven Police Department. It is an interracial fuck you. It is one that is extended to all of the members of their staff, record label, and everyone.
Dewan, we want to just, I don't agree with your fuck you. I certainly think it's, the wrong messaging. Personally, I'm going to take the back of back the blue, but at least I'm going to give you credit. Talked to a lot of folks on this show in my line of work, and at least you've probably been the only brave one to ever actually qualify like that. So I'm giving you, honestly, some props. I do think that you talk about the incident that took place earlier on down in West Haven in the summer with the taser. It kind of struck me when I watched the video, and now it's been my third or fourth time having a chance to talk through it, not just with you, but with the other folks involved, the key players, hearing about Senator Bradley and his involvement. I kind of feel like it was almost, it looks set up to me in a lot of ways. And that's just giving you my vision looking in to the incident. Any comments on that?
We didn't say it. I don't want to sound conspiratorial, but again, I'm a person that actually believes that we all are related in a way. And when I get out of a car, if I had tried to run over some people, whether kid or not, that's why I qualified. I didn't see the part there. But whether kid or not, the last thing I would do is get there and start moving with the police officer like a police officer as if we are buddies. I would imagine, I would hope that the police officer would arrest me if I had done something like that.
But you know the police officer.
I'm not the only one that noticed that, basically.
Yeah, but the first thing you go on the scene.
You noticed it too.
Yeah, well, I think I'm looking at a video, and you said earlier there's some more video there, and really in an investigation, that's what has to take place. But one of the things I do know is I've been in many situations where crowd control is a key component, right? We saw crowd control go off yesterday in Washington, D.C. Law enforcement officers were hurt and injured. There was no respect for law enforcement by those terrible actors down in Washington. But in the same scenario, I saw on the video, the screaming, the yelling. I mean, do you think that's necessary? How would you like to be the guy on that side having that kind of attention?
Well, in my experience doing crowd control, because as you've hinted, that's exactly what I have to do to keep our protests safe. Unfortunately, sometimes the police take a bullying tone, and the only way you get them to de-escalate is to escalate with them. Mm-hmm. So it's unfortunate, but the tactics are such when you come in, and our police are trained to come in escalating. The only time, the thing is, when you outnumber them, sometimes the easiest way to keep peace is to yell, curse, and everything else so that they want the situation to calm down because of the power imbalance. So one of the strategies becomes to escalate before they escalate so that we can de-escalate.
Dewan, when you're talking about this escalation, let me say this. Do you think it's, trained professional police officers? I was a corrections guy. You get trained for crowd control, very similar, regardless of, how you look at it behind the gates or not. I do think that the difference is not knowing who has weapons of sort of larger scale weapons on the streets. That's a definite been there as well. Do you ever feel for the officers? Do you ever feel bad for the cops? I mean, you're like doing your thing. You're passionately into it, but you're like, geez, maybe I shouldn't be so hard on these guys.
Honestly, it's harder because I feel for the cops because I understand exactly how hard it would be because, again, being Buddhist, I picture myself waking up in another person's skin with my body. Now, if I woke up tomorrow and I was a cop and I still had a job to do, I'd still have a job to do. I'd still have institutions that make it a certain way, and I would have to do what that person is doing. So I feel supreme empathy for them, and that's why I try my best to make sure that we always leave with everybody safe.
So, but you definitely condone what we saw in that video, right? You condone that that amount of energy, the yelling, the video, and
because in the full video, because I've watched it several times. I couldn't see it from here, but I've watched this so many times.
Yeah,
Kurt even apologized for his wording. And the officer managed to get under his skin. But I think in this case, we have to separate what would be something that would be innate to the West Haven PD to what would be innate to Officer Croce and the relationship with my partner Kurt Erickson.
What do you think of the what do you think of the Proud Boys when you see the groups that are out there? Well, Navon, if you can pull up the Proud Boys thing. When you see groups, and again, we're really referencing in this conversation, Devon, is really about, you know, there's lots of groups that are out there protesting. First Amendment rights are the first rights, and you said even carrying the Second Amendment. What do you feel when you see folks that are out there in this line of work, and maybe with a different topic to drive, but the Proud Boys, for example, here in the United States have kind of swept onto the nation? What's that make you feel as an anti-police state individual? What do you think about them?
Scared, honestly, because, you know, see, the thing is, from our perspective, they work in tandem with the police. Of course, we think that the police are more likely to help them than they are to help us. So it's more like, and we've seen it in practice. I mean, you've seen the video. If you were one of my viewpoint, I would imagine you would see it the same way. Mm-hmm. When a white supremacist attacks us, we see an officer quick to come and help them.
Keep that video up if you could. So do you see, so when I look at the Proud Boys, you're saying, do you think that they are a white supremacist group?
Oh yeah, I'm completely sure they are, but I'm sure that they're gray enough that they can make it past 2010's very blurred understanding after Trump has moved the Overton window so far over into racist.
So I'm just looking at looks like the leader of the Proud Boys, right, who is Enrique.
Yeah, he's Latino. Yeah,
Latino, right. He's got a very, actually, I'd say you and him probably have very similar tone and skin color. Very, very close. I think many of their members, it's confusing. You know, when you see some of the videos, I'm not one here. I'm not defending Proud Boys. I'll draw the line on the blue line and I'll stick with that, what I know. But I just wanted to know from your feelings, would you walk the march? Would you walk side by side with these folks if you had the same issue?
No, only because of the history there. Even with Malcolm X, he tried one time to work with George Lincoln Rockwell, who was a white supremacist and wasn't seen. He was a straight up Nazi, but Nazi wasn't seen quite as racist for that moment. And when he tried working with him, it really backfired on him, because in the end, some relationships are toxic, and when somebody believes that people shouldn't be allowed to exist on any given landmass because they happen to be black, white, Asian, whatever, some racial nonsense that we should have left in the Stone Age or in our last bygone age, then you really can't find common cause with them because they're passionate about killing other people.
Do you not think that possibly, and that's, you know, thank you, Navon, on that one. So that was the Proud Boys. We're continuing the conversation here. I'm very happy that we're having a nice, respectful, you know, I think Dewan Eastman, I didn't know what to expect from you, and I don't think you knew what to expect from me. This certainly seems more let's get to know each other conversation there. I will quite honestly tell you some of the things I've reviewed a lot of your posts, and I'm sure you could do the same for me. There's a lot of things we won't agree on. I think the one thing I do agree that you have a passion for what you think is reaching out to stop things. What is it really that you want to end with your efforts? What is it that you want? If you could stop anything today, you get the magic wand, what are you going to do?
And you're right. Whenever you step out on a path, you have to know what your end goal is. And for me, it's always been, honestly, it's to have America be more like we think we are. Or more like it seems to a lot of the people who I meet on the conservative right, where we think we are a meritocracy. If we ever got to the point where we were even just a meritocracy, where we were somewhat starting on a fair ground, and what I mean by that is not that, I mean literally like there was some sense of proportion and justice in our placement in this system, and a mild sense of hope and optimism for the future, I honestly would still be protesting for the perfect, but I wouldn't be protesting like I am now.
So so I respect that. So you're driven by really your feeling. Do you feel racism has affected you personally in your life?
I have to be honest. In my life, all the way up, there's a division. When I was younger, I was in the South, and also I was not married into it, if you will. And But I also had this vernacular that I'm sure you've noticed that makes it a lot harder to, it kind of distinguished me in a way. So that gave me an odd pass. And that is a form of racism that can work to your benefit or to your chagrin. And I noticed in the latter part of my life, it worked somewhat to my advantage just because of, I guess, how me being a rarity in the areas I was in.
Do you feel, you know, Dewan, do you feel that your relationship, I think, and I don't want to assume, is your wife white or Hispanic?
Yes.
She is white. So you have two children who are with one mother who is white and one father who is black. We'll give you your Irish. I'll give you your credit for your Irish in you. Right? I don't want to deny you. So
you can keep the Irish if you'd like.
All right. Well, you don't want to drink a Guinness with me. That's fine. But
oh no, I'll drink that Guinness.
All right. Then we'll do that. But my point is, are you raising your children in a different way? Are you making them very aware of the world they live in? Are you supporting them? They're going to have different challenges than you, right? I mean, they're going to be identity wise. I know personally in my own family, sometimes there's a different attempt towards. You know what? I might say something, and it might mean one thing to you and one thing to somebody else, right? So how do you deal? And I kind of think this is the bridge that we need to build, because I think the gap between what's going on with Blue Life's jobs, you know, I don't want to call it matters to have the argument, but the folks, what they're dealing with, when I see that video and I see the screaming, it does remind me of prison, right? It doesn't seem like a place somebody wants to resolve. It seems like anarchy and antagonist and that's my perspective, right? But how are you going to teach your children this going forward in the world they're going to live in?
As we always do with our kids, very carefully, because there are plenty of times where, even seeing my own example, I believe that I failed at not yelling something back that was offensive to a police officer, just because I thought he was being, I wouldn't say thought, we had lost a code of respect there. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that's really tragic about what's happened to our country. And I honestly don't really think you can blame any one group for this. I think there's actually something to the intelligent assessment that we might have been pushed over by Russia or something in some way yet to be determined by us. But if you follow the intelligence assessments, and it changed things a bit nationally, or accelerated things to give us a preview of what we could be.
Do you feel
that? You were saying?
No, I was going to say to you on that follow-up, kind of carry on, because, you know, we're not getting short on time, but, you know, we want to make sure respecting your time and the show here with Dewan Eastman. And again, you are the owner and partner of Citizens Opposed to Police States here in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. You have a very wide education background. You served in the military. You are raising a family here in Connecticut, and you feel passionate enough to go out and get yourself arrested for what you're doing. You know, I looked at what happened over the summer, for example, Dewan, and the George Floyd incident. What did that make you feel like when you saw that take place with George Floyd in America?
I cried. As a martial artist, I've been in fights, and I know what it's like to choke a person out for maybe a few minutes in a fight because you have to, and they tap or something. The level of maliciousness that it takes to sit there and listen to a person screaming for his mom and dying for 8 minutes. People don't really, I mean, you have to have been in a fight or some form of combat to understand that that's literally like hours. And I honestly just thought, there is no world where people who think that way about human life should be given charge over any human lives in a fair and democratic country.
How does it make you feel when some people are said, well, he's a scumbag, he deserved it?
We need to stop. Didn't Jesus say all of us have fallen short of the glory?
I haven't talked to Jesus lately, but maybe he said that.
I personally believe that we have to start as a culture valuing life. I'm not talking about the abortion issue. I don't want to really get into that because I don't have a strong opinion on it. Mm-hmm. But excluding that issue, but with that issue, it's a really strong boast, or a really strong, I guess, pushing of your intellect to say that you care so much about life, and not everybody says this, I know, that you care about someone's sperm and an egg getting together at that moment. You care about even all those lives. and then say, I don't care because he committed some crimes in the past.
So staying on this line of questioning here, I don't want to call it questioning, but, you know, just the conversation, you're really, it's interesting because race seems to motivate, right? But it's it's more than race today. As we watch George Floyd, you know, you can go back in the, I guess, the beginning of Black Lives Matters. We looked at what happened with Michael Brown. Later, that officer was found not guilty or indicted. He was certainly not indicted nor found guilty of defending himself. And I've looked at that case on a different level. I was serving in the state house, and some examples were being brought to us on this police accountability bill that I did not vote for when I was serving. And I got to tell you, the Michael Brown incident really struck me as most of the information we were going through as one of those incidents that took place that it was a rush to judgment. And the investigation, by the way, most of those investigated in that incident, they were people of that community. They actually, their statements, defended the officer. How do you feel when you hear about something that takes place and it gets all riled up, the news media, the CNN, you know, and I love picking on CNN because they suck, and as far they love to get everyone riled up. How does that make you feel when you find out maybe in the end that, well, we didn't have all the information, and that's not how it was?
It's, in our case, we're dealing with systemic issues, so it's sort of like, for us, it's a, if you pick the wrong Rosa Parks that they had to go through with the civil rights era. We forget there were a lot of Rosa Parks. Mm-hmm. So the letdown is more a, oh, we picked the wrong one, because we understand that on our side, the fact pattern is so strong that we feel that we hold ourselves to due to various reasons. On the other side, the rush to judgment can be all for at least an unthinking public. And I think that as a society, we're in danger, and I think we'd both agree to this, if we don't all stop being so quick to rush to judgment.
Rush to defend, rush to judge. I think we do that a lot. I will say this, law enforcement has a job. Their job is, you know, out there. It's obviously detailed. There needs to be oversight. We can talk about that in a minute, and we'll get into it. But, you know, let's take Jacob Blake. Most recently this week, there was a release, Jacob Blake, and he is on a warrant for a sex offense charge, low-ranking sex offense charge, assault charge. But nonetheless, the reports are, and the indictment was not followed through. The officer was actually exonerated in any charges. That individual actually caused another real uprising from similar to the George Floyd issues. But are we putting value in someone that really doesn't deserve it? Maybe he was pulling a knife out. Wouldn't that make you feel a little different about someone who was shot and that officer was actually doing the right thing? Or would you rather have the officer maybe get killed?
Number one, with uprising, I think the term uprising is important to look at. If we have peaceful get-togethers and no one gets hurt, then I'm for the most part for it anyway, innately. I honestly think we need to get together as a country more. But, you know, away from just the social media stuff, just be people in person. But I honestly do think that it's going to be a very nuanced conversation for all of us when we talk about how much force and what kind of force police can use and should use and what they should be called for. And I think that if we get too caught up on those singular cases, sometimes it's like the ball, we're sitting there chasing the ball and pretending like the rest of the world's not looking at our mass numbers.
Do you think the media is enjoying what they're doing to us?
Sadly, I honestly do think they are.
They play both sides, right?
Yeah.
And you you're an activist. You're an individual who has committed his life right now at this current state in your life to get out in front of a topic you feel passion. But I think I'd ask again, I mean, we look at each and every one of these incidents that take place, and they're serious incidents. And there have been I think it was the Georgia, maybe a few years back, officers chasing a black gentleman a little older through a park and uses a gun to shoot that individual. That in any trained officer's mind that I know, that is the most egregious, you know, Tennessee versus Garner. That's the root of the law, right? So why would you see that as something that was smart, legal, or even close to making sense? That officer has since been arrested and serving life in prison. We've seen time after time bad actors in law enforcement. I think it's a very small one percentile of the incidents take place. I have a feeling, though, we get so overdramatic with, like you just said, and we agree, we get the media push, we get the social media push, and we don't get all the information. Don't you think we should give this officer a time, or these officers a time, to actually go through the investigative process? Do you trust the system?
I don't trust the system by nature because I'm anti-systematic, but we have to work in the system that we're in. So there's a great case to keeping cool. And you're right, the media plays both sides. It rushes everything. It is an instigator of a lot of the violence in its own ways because of its urge for ratings. And I think that that's why the job of an activist is so important, because we're doing the opposite of what the media is doing. We get our people out there. And you notice, again, most of my protests are peaceful because we understand the passion that folks want to get out there. And then we say, we're going to do this peacefully. And that's where we have to have a contract with the cops. These people that are angry with you, us as activists, we're going to get here. We're going to let them do some yelling, but we need you to help us de-escalate too. And I honestly think in Connecticut, we've done a better job of that than the country has done.
So you think you're setting an example of the way that you go about this sort of, and I will agree, I'm in the city of Norwich. This is where we're filming from. And they all pick on me, Duane, because I say Norwich funny. I don't know why, but they do. But we're here now, and actually during their this sort of energy that took place this past summer, there was a gathering right across here in the town hall. We're right next to it, and where there was actually no incidents of arrest, there was a little bit of very minor skirmishes and maybe standoffs, but the law enforcement folks here worked directly with the organizers, Black Lives Matters. They worked with organizers, civic-minded folks that were there, and they worked with the mayor's office. They all worked together, and in fact, there was some bad actors that came into that event, and the actual organizers were like, no, no, we want you to go home. I do think Connecticut is a model for that. But why is this West Haven incident that clearly was a history there between two people? And I'm not asking you to get out of the, you know, sort of out of the norm here. From the perception, it looks like that was something that was started on purpose, not something that was actually organic. That's my question.
Yeah, and that is the odd thing, because I'm sure you've noticed in the conversation, I don't really like to speculate. I like to speak more on, you know, the facts that are in front of me and deal with them. But it's like the common sense bug is that West Haven is like North Haven was, and mm-hmm. and we have an institutional problem that Croce was just us seeing exactly how bad the bullying could be because he hated the fact that Kurt is a white gentleman who works for Black causes mm-hmm. and minority causes because he wants a more equal society.
But you touched on something though. You really touched on something that I want to ask, because you don't want to speculate. You said you just said your words are you don't want to speculate, but is it not true that when you actually go to organize an event, maybe for something like that or for what you just posted about the West Haven, you're really speculating? You don't have all the news, you don't have all the information. So you're actually not really doing what you're saying when it comes to that if you're reacting.
I agree. There is a degree of hypocrisy, but you have to think I'm mitigating the reactions.
Well, you can't keep agreeing with me. You have to argue with something. Jesus Christ.
The argument is a strategy to get it in there.
You're trying to suck me into the game. I can tell, because we got to start arguing. No one's going to watch this damn thing if we don't start yelling at each other. Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, straight up, what I'm doing, people are dying on our side. These people want to riot. When organizers come in, what we're doing is taking the energy that wants to riot because someone's dead and saying, please channel that productively. When an organizer is on your front door, that means a riot could have been inside your house. And that, for me, it's not that I always want to protest. It's that I know that if they don't protest right now, it could get worse.
Do you know how many law enforcement officers have been killed in the line of duty in 2020?
Honestly, I don't. Could you tell me?
Yeah, I'm going to look up. Let's see. We're looking that up now. Last time we were here, it was 251 officers. And as I scroll down through this list of all the officers. And this is where I think I appreciate where you're having the conversation, and I'm listening to you and learning. But we get a little off the rails, in my opinion. There's a lot of question about race when it comes to law enforcement, systemic race, you want to call it. When I look at most of the folks that were killed in the line of duty, there is more probably faces of color, brown and tan skin folks, a lot of different racial backgrounds that have been killed here in this country. Isn't that sort of concerning for you, that we're losing officers who just put their duty belt on to go to work and got shot in the face and killed in their cruisers?
It does, but it's part of why I do my work. From my perspective, it's because they've been trained to escalate in situations, and they've inherited a racist institution where if I went in as me right now into a police institution, I'd be pressured to do the job the way they do it. If anything, I want to free them to be the real law enforcement that they ideally want to be, as opposed to being what they are presently.
Well, do you think that the possibility is, though, that we maybe need to stop the pointing the fingers and maybe also taking responsibility? Do you think that there's a time when a bad guy, a bad actor, a bad woman goes out, causes some sort of, you know, activity, and the actual police officers, although that individual might be, their actions might be stopped, right? That's the training to stop the action, and that person ends up dying because of their own action. Do you ever see that on the side of the law enforcement?
Unfortunately, it's inherent in law enforcement. We erase the violence of the state, but the violence of the state is necessary at times, especially if it's vigilante violence, like violent racists hitting the streets with AR-15s. The question is, will law enforcement be law enforcement by keeping that equal protection clause of the Constitution as they do it? Because when the inequities come in societally, we get the contradictions, as they would say in the Marxian language, or we get the damage, which is dead people.
Do you know anybody who's in Antifa or associated with Antifa? Do you know anybody yourself?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot of them. You know what we do. I'm not going to lie to you and say we don't know and meet people who associate with Antifa at these rallies and all other things. They're there, if anything, because they know we're watching them. They're easier to keep from, you know, they're not going to be violent in our protest because they know if they were, everyone would turn on them.
So, Dewan, I'm gonna tell you this. This is I'm going to make this a two-part series. Because we're coming down to about a 5-minute mark, right? And you and I certainly didn't complete the conversation today. I appreciate your candor, your honesty, your upfrontness. I usually do a little rant and close out, and it's not going to be a rant; it's just going to be a commentary here. But before we let you go, where can people find you? What can they do to connect with you? And what size shirt do you want of Back to Blue, Southeastern Connecticut, from me to you?
For the shirt, make sure it's a small. My cats would love to scratch it up. And
Not funny, Dewan. Not funny. So where can people find you?
And Facebook, Dewan Eastman. Mm-hmm. It's actually the easiest place to find me. I post every protest I'm getting ready to go to because it's Connecticut.
Okay. Well, Dewan, I'm gonna reach back out to you. We're gonna get you back on, and I think we might set up a panel and have some maybe an officer, retired officer, someone from Back to Blue. We do support Back to Blue, Southeastern Connecticut. That's each and every Friday here with the News Rocky. Dewan, I'm gonna let you go now. Thank you so much, and we'll be in touch to get you back on again. Okay.
Thank you. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks. So, guys, this was News Rocky. I think we had a very interesting conversation, Dewan Eastman. And I know some of the folks out there who are News Rocky fans, the loyalists, you know what I'm about. You know, you probably wanted me to jump a little uglier with Dewan. And quite honestly, there's a lot of things we're not going to agree on. But quite honestly, at the end of the day, this is about getting to the bottom. The bottom of what's the real issues. And, you know, I think Connecticut is one of the greatest states in the entire country when it comes to acknowledging and dealing with the issues that are out there on our streets. These law enforcement folks, in my opinion, folks, each and every day they hit the streets. Each and every day they deal with some of the toughest issues and decision-making of any job out there. These people are putting their lives on the line. As I said, I think it's about 251 or plus law enforcement officers were killed in the line of duty this year. This is a problem. The problem comes down to when we see the issue actually being more driven by the corporate media. DeJuan actually agreed with me. We see corporate media probably being more about puppet mastering than actually news reporting. Guys, this is News Rocky. I think our show today certainly wasn't the energy level that we had with the Washington, D.C. Coverage we came with you live with. But we are all about having these conversations. There's a lot of fake news and real news and honestly some shitty news involved in this issue. We have to stop allowing the corporate media folks to continue to drive a narrative. That's the only way we're going to stop this. You want to put DeJuan out of business and you want to stop officers from getting killed, we need to stop allowing the media, the corporate media, CNN, CNBC, CBS, the AP, Washington, I can keep on going down the LA Times. You want me to keep going? I'll keep doing it. New York Times. These are the fake narrative driving dividers. And you know what? As a law enforcement, Back the Blue, South Houston, Connecticut, each and every Friday we come to you with the Back the Blue story. We are certainly proud to say that. I'm also proud to tell you that I'm going to keep having conversations with people like DeJuan, people who are out there, the agitators, the people who are out there causing these ruckus throughout Connecticut and throughout the country, because we want to get to the bottom of this and try to find a way, maybe build that bridge and stop it. I don't think DeJuan's an angry, evil person. I do think he's a little off in his theory, and we want to get there. We want to understand why that is, right? We don't want to be ignoring it, because you know what? Just ignoring it is not going to let it make you go away. Guys, this has been News Rocky. Thank you for getting in the ring with me today. We look forward tomorrow to coming to you live, Monday through Friday, guys. Coming right here from the 80 Pie Hops studio in downtown Norwich, right next to the town hall, right above the Pie Hops restaurant. Helms Media Group bringing you News Rocky. We'll see you tomorrow in the ring, guys.